Africa Business Report.
Dr. Martin Davies, the Managing Director of Emerging Markets at Afro Africa at Deloitte. And our continent is going to feel the impact of COVID-19 so severely. And all kinds of warnings of a looming health crisis. But already, economies are feeling the pain, Dr. Martin Davies.
Yeah, good evening, Bruce. This is not a conversation to cheer up your day, huh?
Nope.
It's a few weeks ago that we spoke, but it seems a lifetime ago. So much has happened, hasn't it?
It has, and the world has fundamentally changed, and our continent's immediate future is fundamentally different to what it was a couple of weeks ago, yes.
Undoubtedly, I think we spoke about what I call the four waves. The first wave, if you will, was what the FT called this morning, patient zero. That was China. And perhaps other surrounding Asian countries. Second wave of Southern Europe still is. I think Italy and Spain. Third wave is UK and the US. And we have a fourth wave pending, seemingly. But the question is, can we stave it off? The question is, do we have the data? There's massive nervousness around the conflict, of course. In Lagos, of course, in Nigeria, West Africa, compounded by incredibly low oil prices. The bottom of the economy is just totally falling out. East Africa is a bit like us, seeing how things are progressing here. But is this a case that, this is a rhetorical question, is this a case whereby Africa's ability to deglobalization will ultimately protect us? I don't know. And this is what we'll figure out next week or two.
I mean, when you speak to your friends across the continent, of whom you have many, just how much of a sense of trepidation is there about the next month, 12 months ahead?
You know, it's a question, you know, do we get to the next 2-3 weeks? And what about the potential reinfections? And we actually don't know. And this is compounding the significant complexity and uncertainty. We don't have the data to make the accurate decisions. We're doing as much as we can. We're collecting data as the latest across the continent, trying to process it all and see where we are. It's certainly not easy. And I think, of course, you know, not just us in South Africa, but imagine other countries where even a month ago, there was a potential sort of debt default on Eurobonds. 20-odd countries in Africa owing over $100 billion in Eurobond issuance. And that was pre-COVID, pre-C19, pre-oil price collapse. So we have no fiscal firepower, I'm afraid. And I think the global financial architecture, I think IMF needs to start to be a bit more creative, I think. And we see this significant capital outflow out of you know, emerging markets. So how do we start to recycle that money back to where it's most needed? It ain't needed arguably in the US dollar. It's needed particularly in the developing world, what's called the global south. And I think the way things are progressing now fiscally and ultimately economically, this is going to be challenging to say the least. And that's the understatement of the day.
Dare you map any time period at all in terms of scenarios that you see?
You know, as I was thinking earlier, in a personal note, this is my, we all have our memory. This is my third crisis. The first one, I was living in Asia, as you remember, in South Korea, and when the Asian financial crisis hit, financial shock and subsequent economic sort of collapse to an extent, and then relatively rapid recovery. IMF came in, downgrades, rating agencies. This is all deja vu to an extent. The second crisis was the third or fourth even, where we had the emerging markets crisis in 2003. The taper tantrum, which happened there about, you know, then we had the Western or so-called Atlantic crisis in 2008, and now we've got one which is significantly different. People are dying this time. This is ultimately humanitarian, and that makes it so impossible. There is no precedent here. And the challenge is, I think, is a lot of it. The only upside is China's coming back online, albeit slowly. The recovery will not be V-shaped. It's very difficult to kickstart China today than what it was even 10 years ago, considering it's far more services-driven, accounting for 50-odd% of GDP now, over 50%. It's far more private consumption-driven. It's easy to kickstart an economy with a very centralized decision-making, kickstart investments and manufacturing than it is private consumption. So much of it depends, I think, you know, Africa's growth train has arguably been hitched to China the last 2 decades or so. Challenges, we should really be looking at how rapid or how steep that Chinese growth trajectory is going forward. Can they actually kickstart private consumption? And that will certainly be somewhat of a tailwind, at least to us in the coming months.
There is an argument that this is going to be the opportunity for the world to decouple itself from China, that the world has become so heavily dependent on China, and those fractures are now being exposed simply because China being the world's biggest factory, and with the stoppages that we saw initially out of China and the impact that that's had on global supply chains, reveals the weaknesses of globalization, how as it has evolved over the last quarter of a century. And it's time now for countries to take back their manufacturing bases, for countries to become a little bit more inwardly focused rather than simply going for the route of cheapest manufacture at all costs.
I think to an extent, Bruce, that does have some truth to it, but we can't, the decoupling will be more geopolitical. I think China's looking to certainly has been very assertive in recent weeks in trying to recapture the narrative. Around and limiting the geopolitical damage that's been done post the start of this in Wuhan in December in Hubei province. So I think increasing geopolitical fractions perhaps, but China ain't going away. And China's sort of, you know, we've seen as you allude to, trade wars, geoeconomic conflict of the U.S., tech wars, think Huawei, ZTE, and these companies. And now it's supply chain issues. Companies, I think the U.S. particularly, would be more reticent perhaps. But globally, I think, you know, give us 2-3 years. And I think a lot of these deglobalization concerns we're seeing in very stark terms now will have faded away somewhat.
You're sounding quite downbeat, Martin. I mean, you know, we can look 3 years ahead, but you're... 3 years is 1,000 days. We're only 5 days into a lockdown. Suddenly we've realized how long a day can be. Is there a glimmer of hope for us, or do we go through something very significant and something very earth-shattering on this continent as a result of this COVID-19?
You know, we've had many crises in the past, Bruce, and a crisis must result in significant structural reform for long-term growth, think next generation. I go back to what I said earlier. I saw this in Asia. I lived through it. I experienced it in Southeast Asia, in Northeast Asia, in the late 90s, early 2000s. There needs to be a control of the elite in terms of, in many cases, the political thinking, economic models, ideologies, if you will. This is not too dissimilar from sort of a Latin American funk, if you will, where you have countries that are more progressive and capital-friendly and reformist, and those that are more ideological and not. And I think we have to make a choice. There's no more fudging issues anymore. And when you say we at Africa, of course, the very big continent, we can't move it all together, unfortunately. But I think key countries will start to stand out. South Africa needs to be one of those. Structural reform is here. It's painful, it's real, and the medicine will be very distasteful. But the outcome ultimately, hopefully, will be more positive than what it is now.
Dr. Martin Davies, Managing Director of Emerging Markets at Africa for Deloitte. Thank you very much for joining us this evening on The Money Show.